Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, you have a famously short attention span. So we wanted to pick that topic close to your heart. Quick food.
It's perfect.
Right now. Hungry now? Cook it now. Eat it now. Instant gratification, right?
Well, there's nothing wrong with that.
That's why you're a perfect chef for our culture, aren't you?
I like everything to be quick. Everything in my life.
Quick answers, quick
explanations. Hopefully there aren't any police officers
drive
out
fast.
There.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do not drive a red car.
Officers, she's settled down.
I have settled down. That's not true.
I won't give you a plate number, but she's... Oh, boy. So, what's on your list?
Oh, there's a lot of fun things that you can do quickly.
Okay, let's go meal by meal. When you're hungry, it's breakfast, something quick, something good. Well, what are you doing?
I'm probably doing an English muffin, preferably something really, really good with a piece of sausage and a fried egg on it and maybe a slice of spicy cheese. Or, which is not very chefy, but that's, you asked me, that's what I have for breakfast. But if I want something...
It's old English breakfast with Cindy Wolf.
Quick for guests, I'll make French toast. And because we make our own brioche, it makes really, really good French toast. And I'll just whisk a couple of eggs in with some heavy cream, probably a pinch of ground cinnamon, a little bit of sugar, and a tiny bit of good vanilla. And it can be vanilla extract. It doesn't have to be beans. And sometimes I'll put alcohol in there, maybe a little Madeira or a little bit of cognac. Depends on who I'm serving and what age they are. And then just with brioche, it's such a light bread that you don't want to leave it in there too long or it'll actually break
apart.
It needs to
go. There's your liquid mixture. That's a quick dip
in
the bowl.
And out. And then butter.
And kind of a fat slice of brioche.
It does need to be a little bit thicker than you would think, just so that it doesn't fall apart. But, a good saute pan, stainless steel or Teflon if you have them. I don't use Teflon pans, but I know that a lot of people do in their homes. And this is certainly the time to use one because it makes it a lot easier.
Calphalon's a good solution in that sort of situation. Mm.
Yeah, and also I know my sister has one of these. I think AllClad produces it, and I'm sure other producers, but it's a two-handled pan, pretty good surface to work on. It covers two burners, and it does have a Teflon coating on it.
I think in some places in the world they call them griddles.
Okay, so get your griddle out and use that to do French toast for multiple people because that's a great surface on which to get a lot cooked.
Hardest thing in the world with French toast and with pancakes is to have the right amount of heat.
Oh,
I swear.
For sure. And that's when you have to know your pan, because if you're not in a Teflon pan, you better know how your pan works, because you will stick to the bottom of the pan.
You got to run a test pattern. You got to run a test pancake. You got to run a test piece of French toast. Do not serve that first piece.
Right. Just eat it.
Okay. It's going to be black. It's going to be too blonde.
Oh,
it's going to be...
My. Okay.
Small children. Pancakes are
pancakes,
big deal.
Waffle. Well, not waffles, but French toast, all those things. Yeah, you do. Well, you definitely need to test a pancake out and make sure it's rising properly and all that good stuff.
What am I going to eat?
I don't know.
Test a pancake.
Okay. But the breakfast is... Breakfast, everything at breakfast can be quick. Something else that's fun to do is to just, obviously omelets are a great source of utilization. So there's pretty much nothing that you can't put in an omelet. I don't mean together. I just mean if you have some mushrooms in your refrigerator from dinner last night, they're already cooked off. Why not put those in with a little goat cheese and a little bit of fresh basil from the garden or, whatever you have around. But omelets can be very quick.
Omelets are intimidating for folks.
I can understand that.
I think if you want to be quick and not be freaked out, you can make a frittata in the pan or an omelet that just incorporates everything.
Yeah, and then you don't have to flip anything.
You whisk
roll
it all,
anything.
You whisk it all together. You make sure you don't have any uncooked ingredients.
Yeah, Chris made an unbelievably good frittata for employee meal last night, and oh my gosh, I mean it took a little while because he made a gigantic thick one, but it doesn't have to. I mean,
the fancy way to do it is to cook it in a water bath. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to. If you have a nice heavy pan, and honestly, in a cast iron.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
That can be nice. Pretty darn fun.
And you don't have to flip it out. You can just either eat it in that vessel. Let everybody just come up to the stove. It'll stay warm that way. Let them have a spatula and just cut it for them and just let them slice it, pull it out.
Well, that's the thing is that you can serve a couple people pretty quickly. And Have a lot of good stuff in there.
I often do that when I have guests. I used to play the how do you want your egg game, and by the time I was done with six people, I'm like, yeah, okay.
That is the hardest.
There goes the entire morning.
So that is the hardest game in the world. So
yeah, I'm like that game, and I'm a chef.
A quick anecdote. I was working in Philadelphia in the late 80s, mm-hmm. and I think I told you this story once. And I was a hotshot young sous chef, and I was doing seven-course meals, you know, tasting meals, you know, nouvelle cuisine at a little restaurant in a private club, dining room there. Mm-hmm. Very involved stuff. And the 30-year breakfast cook called out.
Oh, gosh.
Chef called me.
You mean he'd been doing it for 30 years?
He'd been doing it for 30 years.
Oh, boy.
This is for another part of the club.
That's a bad guy to have call
That's
out.
That's the worst guy to have call. You always, if you wondered who the most important guy in the kitchen is.
That one in the dishwasher.
That's definitely, oh my God. That was the worst morning of my entire life.
Oh, gosh. You had to do all those dishes? You're like, this is going to take
a while.
Why
does everyone eat eggs differently? Why don't they eat them the way that I want to make them?
Well, and also, not only do they not eat them the way you want them to, but then it's not just fried. It's over medium, over hard. And you're like, what?
So I had a special, okay? I had a special because I had access to my little kitchen, right?
I wish I had been there. I really wish I had been there.
I made an omelet. If you wanted to wait an hour and 15 minutes for your eggs, you would have loved it.
Just to watch you. It would have been fun.
I lost my mind.
I could live forever off that memory.
I wasn't so reasonable and zen, actually, like I am now.
All right, so keep telling the story.
So
zen.
Oh, yeah.
Seriously? Okay, go ahead. Tell the story.
I'm as calm as a monk. So ask anybody. So I had a special. I was very excited about it.
Oh, no, you made a special?
I made a special. It was an omelet special. You're talking about omelets.
Oops.
That's what made me think about it.
Okay.
It was an omelet special with poached lobster and chanterelles.
Oh, that was popular.
And fresh snipped chives. So we served 140 breakfasts.
Oh, you did 138 omelets.
Myself and a pantry guy.
Mm-hmm.
We did how many omelets?
138.
It was a shutout.
Zero. Oh, you didn't do any?
We did 138 different kinds of eggs.
Oh my gosh, I would have thought a lobster and chanterelle omelet would have been like crazy popular.
Had you been there at this club,
no.
That was primarily, I think breakfast was all men that morning.
Okay.
If you had been there, you would have had the one omelet. I will never make that omelet again as long as I live. Worst morning of my life. Anyway, but the breakfast cook, yeah, there's talent in that.
Oh my gosh, I want to tell my story. That has nothing to do with breakfast.
Okay,
it's my nightmare story. I only have one real nightmare story. So when I first started cooking in Charleston, South Carolina, the place where I did my externship.
You worked with me for more than 20 years. You have one nightmare story?
Well, I wasn't even working with you then.
Okay,
how do you feel about that,
amazing.
Tony? Huh?
I feel aggrandized. I feel great.
Actually, I wasn't doing my externship there. I was doing an apprenticeship there. And I had just started working online. So I had never worked in a kitchen before. Well, I did, but it didn't count when I was 16. It definitely didn't count. But so I'm 19 years old. This is my first kitchen experience. I'd waited tables before this. And I started not as garmage, the person that does cold food or salads, but I was prep on garmage when I started in this kitchen. I've never even heard of that title before.
You're the lettuce chopper.
That lasted 2 weeks. And then I became the garmage person. Woo.
Dun, da, da.
I moved up real fast. And then, so when I eventually got on the hotline, it was shortly after I started cooking that we had a couple of slow nights. And my sous chef looked at me and said, you know, I'm going to go home.
He probably went down the street for cocktails.
She went home.
She probably went down the street for cocktails.
Yeah, she went home. And yeah, I'm sure she did that. And I loved her. I mean, I still love her to this day, even after this happened. So she left me there. I was the only person besides the dishwasher in the kitchen. And we had a show kitchen, much like where I work right now, only the garmage station was on the other side of the wall.
Only you were by yourself.
And I was there by myself. And so I had to do all the food by myself. We did 75 people that night. And then we started running out of all the food. So not only am I like going crazy trying to figure out how to cook all this food for all these people by myself, I finally called the dishwasher over and I'm like, dude, you gotta help me. And he had done some prep on garmage, so at least he was putting some salads together. God knows what he was doing over there. I couldn't even see him, but I'm sure it was fine.
It had a romaine lettuce, but anchovy on it, and here's your Caesar, buddy.
Here you go. Here you go. So at some point, I'm like, oh God, and I didn't have the wherewithal to say, don't take any more people. You know, I didn't think that I had the ability to tell a manager that. I was just a line cook, and I'd never worked in a restaurant like that before. So at some point, we had owners there that didn't have anything to do with actually operating the business. They were just you know, owners. And they came in with 12 people and wanted to have dinner. I almost started to cry when the manager came up to me and said, you know, what's his name is coming in with 12 people. I'm like, what? We're out of almost all of our food. And he knew I was back there. I mean, I had a show kitchen. The entire dining room could see me working by myself.
Would you all like some chicken or chicken?
Oh, my God.
Or if that doesn't work out, how about some chicken?
It was one of the worst days of my life. So I know what you're talking about there. Yeah. Yeah. But when I waited tables, I never had a bad nightmare about cooking, ever. Not once. But when I waited tables, oh, my gosh. Almost every night, I would have waiter nightmares.
Yeah. No, they're particular.
Yeah. Very horrifying.
They're particular. Maybe one time we'll have to do a program where we get about 10 different waiters on, and they can just
tell their
worst nightmares.
Worst
Maybe
story.
We should do this for Halloween.
Scary waiter stories.
Waiter nightmares. Ooh.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. I like that. Let's do that.
All right. So let's miss short attention span. Let's stick to breakfast.
Okay, Tony. So what are you quick ideas for breakfast from you?
Quick breakfast in our house. Two things that are favorites. One is a version of the now ubiquitous avocado toast.
Oh, yummy.
So it just nice whole grain bread, toasted, buttered. I can't not butter
it. I love whole grain bread.
Beautiful avocado. Just don't mash it up. Just lay the slices out on the bread.
Okay.
Salt them. Everyone forgets to salt them.
Oh, my gosh. You have to salt avocado.
Yeah. Nice runny egg. Maybe even a little crispy on the edges.
Really?
Right on top of that.
On top of the avocado.
Yeah. This is not my creation.
I'm making that.
But it's good.
That sounds good.
Lots of fresh cilantro.
Oh, no, I wouldn't do that part. Not
and,
with eggs.
And some kind of hot sauce.
Well, that I would do. The cilantro, you lost me at the cilantro and eggs. Blah.
The cilantro avocado thing is
and I love cilantro.
Is a very good thing.
Don't get me wrong.
I love it a
but
lot.
But just not in that situation.
I love it. In
you
case
could put a slice of heirloom tomato on there, too. That'd be pretty sweet.
There's no question.
You could also add a piece of bacon.
There we go. Now there's Cindy
now the
talking.
Wolf, now the wolf is talking.
Now Cindy's talking. The other breakfast is a complete theft from La Beaugravière.
Oh, good. What is
in
it?
In the Rhone Valley. It is a fat piece of toast, a baguette, day old, cooked in butter in a heavy pan till it's browned perfectly and buttered perfectly
Don't
all around.
Don't tell me you're going to put a slice of truffle on there.
And a thick, like the size, the thickness of maybe 3/4 stacked up slice of black truffle on top of that guy.
Oh, well, that's
and
like
a glass and a glass of Paul Roger.
Oh. That's the best breakfast in the world.
Yeah, that's the
ever.
Idea.
Oh, boy.
That's the idea. And that's quick.
I want to eat
that's
that.
That's very quick.
That's super quick.
Yeah. While you're frying the toast, you slice the truffle.
Yum.
And drink your first glass of the champagne.
Oh, Paul Roger.
And then 8 a.m. comes.
Yes, please. And then 8 a.m. comes.
Yeah, speaking of all this stuff, are you going to be ready for the chef's challenge when we get to
I'm extremely ready.
Okay,
I just think
later
you,
in the program?
You might be crying later.
No,
me.
No.
Really
and
sure.
I've made
and
you
I don't
very
see
kind.
That. I don't want to see you crying, so it's really not that bad.
It's very ugly.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm not too scared.
All right.
When we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, a little more quick food, maybe some quick solutions for lunch and for dinner, and then, of course, a chef's challenge. All of that and more on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're talking about quick food today.
Mm-hmm.
Cindy's the perfect person to get into this because she got into about 4 different tangents because she couldn't stay on topic in the first segment. Anyway.
You know,
we talked about breakfast.
Shrimp are a good thing.
Shrimp are
because
a good thing.
Because they cook in like, you know, 2.5 minutes, depending on how big they are.
Yeah, they are a quick thing.
So that's a really good thing for dinner or lunch.
What's a couple of shrimp possibilities that, whether for lunch or for dinner, you think would be a good quickie?
I'm making a dish right now called Shrimp Buford, and my chef, Marcelo, who I worked for in Charleston, used to do this dish.
Buford.
It's a beautiful little town. If you ever saw The Big Chill, it's where they filmed The Big Chill. That white house that the family lives in. Oh my gosh, that's a famous house there. It's a beautiful property. It's right on the Intracoastal Waterway. Beaufort is a gorgeous little town. Not too
How about
far.
The shrimp dish from Beaufort?
So the shrimp dish, Beaufort, is you saute your shrimp, and I use 10, 15 count shrimp, but you can use whatever size you want, and just make sure you have enough for everybody. When I use 10, 15s, I usually do two per person, and I saute. This is one time.
Well, this is as a course, not as a dinner, right?
Well, I don't know. I guess it is.
That'd be a pretty small dinner to have
two shrimp. Okay, then four shrimp per person. So four shrimp per person, sauteed in butter. The pan is cold, very unusual way to cook. But with shrimp, I don't like them to be cooked hard and to get a crust on the outside of them. I like them to be cooked gently. So I start the pan. I use a stainless steel saute pan and start it with butter, whole butter. Put the shrimp in, saute them about halfway on one side, and then pop them over and finish sauteing them on the other side. And then add corn to the pan, and I put roasted corn in. We roast our corn in the husks for about 45 minutes, 40 to 45 minutes at 350 degrees and in a convection oven. And then pull the husk off, the silk off, and cut the corn off the cob. Don't cut too close to the cob. You don't want to eat the cob. It's not desirable.
Is there a quicker solution than the...
You could just cut corn off the cob and put it in the pan. You could just use raw corn. And there's
when it's
nothing
really
wrong
sweet
with
like
that.
This time of the year.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that at all. You could do either way. So... and then just add the corn to the pan, and we deglaze with a little bit of lobster stock, but that may not be terribly convenient for your house. So therefore, what you can do is when you peel and devein your shrimp, just rinse off very quickly. Don't let them sit, but rinse off your shrimp shells in cold water and then put them in a, drain them, put them in a pot and cover them with cold water. Once turn it on high, when it comes up to a boil, turn it off, strain it, and you have a really pretty, very simple, really quick shrimp stock.
It'll deepen that shrimp flavor.
It will. So then you just deglaze the pan with, I mean, I would say for one portion, maybe 1 ounce of that shrimp stock. I had a little bit of fresh lemon juice and finish with really, really finely sliced or chopped green onion, the green part, and then finish with a little bit, another piece of butter and a pinch of salt. And add the green onion right at the end, right before you plate. You do not want that to lose its little bit of crunch and its beautiful color. And that's a super quick, I mean.
It sounds quick and good.
It's super quick. And with that, if
you. For someone wants a big glass of cold, toasty Chardonnay, that probably would be pretty happy.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe a Puy-Puy-Say or something like that.
And then I think another dish that's really, really fun to make is I make a dish with rum. And, you know, if that's okay to do, you can do the same thing. Saute, but this time I would saute the shrimp in corn oil, still a cold pan, and start them off, get them going, flip them over. And then add a little bit of finely chopped shallot to the pan. Now you can add a little piece of butter, just a little one, and work the shallot with the shrimp for probably 30 seconds. Then deglaze. And remember, if you're on a gas stove, you're on an open flame, when you go to add alcohol to a pan, you have to take the pan away from the flame, off the stove. I mean, I would, in the restaurant, we don't do that, but I just don't want anything to happen to you at home.
Add off the flame.
Off the flame. And, you know, well, what you can't do is pour from the rum bottle over the stove, over the burner, because you could catch that whole bottle on fire and it would become a rocket in your hand. So maybe just put a little bit of rum in a little container, like a plastic container, so that you don't have that volatile situation. Tony's looking at me.
I'm just thinking about rocket shrimp. That's all.
So maybe
a new dish.
Let's just be safe and put the rum in a little plastic container so that way you can just pour it over. Then you can flambe it and you're not going to hurt anybody. You're going to tell whoever's standing right next to you, I'm about to catch this thing on fire. And that way they don't burn their hair and or whatever, or your child or whatever. So it's dangerous, this dish. Tony's trying to shake his head. And then you finish.
Welcome to Cindy Wolf's house, where everyone climbs on the stove while she's cooking and dangles their hair over the open flame.
Hey, I'm just trying to be safe.
Oh my.
And you can add a
they get the people off your stove.
You can add a little bit of shrimp stock to this dish as well. Finish with a little bit of cold butter. You can add green onion to this dish. You can add chive to the dish at the end, nor none of the above. This dish I would serve with rice. So you can either do it on its own and eat it and enjoy it, because the sauce is absolutely delicious with the we use Gosling's Black Seal rum. Or I make yellow rice, which is I actually make with turmeric sometimes. And you can buy really, really...
So not saffron, turmeric.
Not saffron, because I don't want that flavor. I mean, I always want that flavor, but not in this particular dish. I want just a little bit of turmeric in. And I can't believe the difference between the way dry, you know, the spiced turmeric tastes now, what's available to us, than what was available to us even 15 years ago when I would buy it. It is so beautiful now. So turmeric goes a little tiny, but it goes a very long way. And so when I make rice, and you can make rice in like 8 to 10 minutes, so it's not that long of a, but you know, or you could have some left over from the night before, and then all you're doing is heating that up and serving this great shrimp dish over. So to make the rice, just saute a small dice of onion and butter, add the rice. You could either use water, salt, and the turmeric, or you could add chicken stock and turmeric, and just very little, literally a couple pinches. And when I, the last step before I put the lid on the pot for rice, I will add butter, a little extra sort of piece of butter, and let it stir in, because it really does make the rice much better. If you're not against butter, I think that makes a big difference. But yeah, the dish together is really fun.
That sounds good. What else you got besides shrimp?
Well, you know, a chicken breast, which is not expensive, so it's good to talk about. Or chicken thighs, which I know you, I love them too, and I know you love chicken thighs. So either one, but
chicken thighs make great tacos.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what.
Well, you have to tell us about that. But with chicken, let's just say it's a chicken breast. I made this the other night, and it was just absolutely simple. And sear your chicken breast and get good color on both sides. And pretty much any chicken breast you buy in the grocery store, you're gonna have to finish in the oven because they're just that big. And I would have my oven on 350. You don't want it on too hot because you don't want to dry out the chicken. You want to cook it relatively gently. And I encourage you to not overcook your chicken because that's not just not good. You know, I mean, of course you want to cook it all the way through.
It'll be done. It'll also be dry.
Be dry and gross. So when that chicken comes out, it's going to have a little carryover. So it's going to cook a little bit more after you bring it out of the oven because it's still hot, and especially if you leave it in the pan. And that's what I do. And then I add fresh lemon juice, a little bit of Tabasco, and a little bit of some sort of fat. You know, it might be extra virgin olive oil. It might be a little piece of butter. I salt it and pepper it and just let it sit in there, and I keep turning it over. And I know that's just the most ridiculously simple thing, but I can tell you that everybody will enjoy it unless you don't like spicy food. And you can always use your favorite hot sauce, but super simple, and that can be served with anything, you know, rice or a taco, or shredded and put into a taco, or, you know, even add it to pasta or grilled vegetables off the grill, you know, that you just ran outside and grilled really quickly. I mean, I think that's the other thing about, that is the other thing about doing quick food. The grill, part of the idea of doing quick food to me is that the cleanup is not crazy.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you're going to only take 5 minutes to make something, but then it takes 20 minutes to do the dishes, what have you gained in time? And the grill is the greatest resource for making cleanups so easy. And now, you know, everybody is used to grilling vegetables as well as their meats and fish and things. You know, it's a great way to do a quick meal.
We were talking about chicken thighs. The thing that brings to my brain, I think my favorite thing I've ever done with them was for the opening of a restaurant, was to do a sandwich, because I love sandwiches. A lot more than you. So I have to talk about a sandwich. So blackening chicken thigh, if you take a boneless chicken thigh, pound it a little bit to make sure it's pretty even to start with, but make sure it's pretty even, make sure the tendons are gone from there.
Mm-hmm.
And once in a while, they'll mm-hmm. bone them out, and they'll leave those white tendons in the chicken thighs. When you mix your spice all together, so that's, don't forget salt.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And for blackening, I follow your old recipe of mm-hmm. the three peppers, white pepper, red pepper, black pepper, dried basil, dried parsley.
Dried thyme. Yeah.
And pretty even on all of those guys. I put a tiny bit of smoked paprika in there as well.
Oh, fun.
But mix all up that seasoning first, and then a very dry chicken thigh in there. If you have a steel pan, or a very heavy pan, but especially a steel pan, you can get it good and hot, really very hot. And if there's skin on that chicken thigh, you can, without putting fat in the pan, you can sear it really nicely and render that fat from that chicken skin right into the pan, and you're going to get an amazing crust on that chicken thigh.
That's great.
You get that one side really good, and then you still have fat in the pan. Flip it over, get the other side. While you have that guy in the oven, you can organize all your sandwich goodies. Your blackened chicken thigh setup as a BLT is pretty darn nice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. mix a little Dijon mustard with mayo for the topping for that guy. Good fun.
That sounds good.
Big side of pickles. Good fun. Watermelon, a little sprinkle of salt. Really good fun. There's a whole lot of excellent stuff you can do with that. That is a very low fat, very low cost, very high happy.
Exactly.
Dish to have. I mean, it could just be a big pile of crunchy lettuce, you know, that you put onto. I always picture like a hamburger bun or something like that, something soft and fluffy and easy to deal with, so you can grapple all the goodies that you put into that sandwich.
Well, it's funny you just talked about that because you basically told them how to blacken fish.
Yeah.
And that is exactly how you do. You would use a cast iron pan to blacken a piece of fish, and the spice mixture you just talked about, you rub on both sides of the fish, and it goes right into that cast iron pan with not a bit of fat in it, and you just blacken both sides. And it is really one of the greatest things to do with an inexpensive piece of fish.
What?
Quite frankly.
I mean, redfish was the classic, like back from the 80s, but...
Yeah.
What kind of fish is the best kind to do? What would you not do it with?
I wouldn't do it with salmon. I wouldn't do it with anything like tuna or anything that you want to cook medium rare, medium rare, anything of super high quality. I just wouldn't. I wouldn't do it to a piece of rockfish either. It's not the right kind of build for the fish. It needs to be like a small flaking fish. You could certainly blacken grouper, and I have before, and grouper can be pretty expensive. But grouper, red snapper, which is another really nice piece of fish.
There's a lot of little Chesapeake Bay fish like porgy and
those are the
perch. Perch is perfect.
Perch and porgy are the perfect sort of fish for that. Yeah, because, you know, the spice is just going to blow out the flavor of the fish. And frankly, if you have an inexpensive piece of fish, you might want to do that a little bit, so it's kind of the point.
Well, that's part of the point.
It's, and a love for spice and the culture.
The blackened fish is great to have with
rice.
One of my favorite things. Rice, yes, but more than that for me, I like it with succotash.
No, that sounds good, of course.
So,
sure.
And there are a million variations on succotash that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a nice use of the butter that...
Yeah. There you go.
You're once in a while a fan of.
Roasted sweet corn and butter beans for succotash.
Well, you're coming into the time of the year when you can get those beans fresh.
Yeah, and I always put a very small dice of zucchini on my succotash, which is not traditional in any way. But I love the flavor of fresh because, again, you're probably going to get it around the same time as the butter beans or lima beans, baby limas, and the roasted sweet corn.
Well, beans coming. You have cannellini beans coming now.
I'm so excited about that.
They always call them October beans.
I cannot wait
to get them. But they show up
now,
and they're cranberry beans.
So you can't.
And you might have
some
on October, but you'd have to preserve them if you wanted.
I cannot wait to get back to the kitchen to work with those. I love those things.
Well, they're coming.
I can't wait.
They're coming. So that's, both the blackened fish and the blackened chicken thigh, those are easy. You can do it with the chicken breast, but honestly, you can't get the same result without that little fat from the skin in the pan.
Okay, so this is quick, and I just made it last night, but it's more fancy. So I pan-roasted halibut. We butter-poached in garlic and shallot 3 snails per order. And I made a crazy tomato sauce yesterday because we have a lot, because of the rain, our tomatoes, a lot of them are split. So you can't really, you can't slice them and make them look beautiful. So I cooked.
They're beautiful on the inside.
They are. Well, they taste good. And so what I did was I sauteed onions and shallots and butter. And then I, right at the very end, before I was getting ready to add any liquid, I added a good bit of finely chopped garlic, worked it until it was, not raw anymore, but no color at all, which you don't want with garlic. And then I deglaze a pan with about 4 ounces of chicken or veal stock reduction, which is actually very important. So you're going to have that in your freezer or, hopefully you froze some from last winter when you were making a lot of stocks and reduction sauces at your house, which I know you do all the time. And so deglaze a pan with that. Add several teaspoons of really, really good tomato paste and add these chopped tomatoes and their juice that, just don't look pretty but taste great, that are fresh and local. And then I did also perfume the dish with one piece of rosemary from my garden. So that actually went in. The rosemary went in with the butter. Then it was the onion shallot, finished with the garlic, then deglaze with the chicken and veal stock reduction, then add the tomato paste, add the fresh tomato, a little salt, a little pepper, and just cooked it down, 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 down. I called it tomato fondue.
It sounds like a great escargot dish. that you happen to put a piece of halibut on.
Oh my gosh. But it's unbelievable.
But
because,
I bet it's great together.
Oh my gosh. We tasted it last night and before I served it. And then you walked in the back door with tomato skins. And I'm like, this is the perfect thing. You had this whole container of tomato skins. And I'm like, okay. So we fried those. And first of all,
I knew you were going to be lacking in the dish if I didn't show up with those.
Oh boy. So the tomato skins like are so gorgeous because they're translucent when they're fried, and I love them and they taste so good. And so it's we just basically did a little, like maybe even a tablespoon of that sauce underneath the fish because it's so intense. And by the way, I strained that sauce through a fine strainer. And so we heat it up, and then that's a little tablespoon of that underneath a piece of pan-roasted halibut. And then the three butter poached snails go on top of the halibut, and then the piece of crispy tomato on top of that. And then we have these droppers now that we drop sauce and dots all around the plate. So you also had a little bit more of the tomato sauce.
Science class.
And then some of the butter garlic shallot from the snails dripped over the top of the... Oh, my God. It was so good.
Are you excited about this dish?
I am extremely. That's what cooking is all about. I mean, I've never made that before. I just started thinking about it. A guest asked for snails over the weekend, so I had a can of snails open. I don't serve snails this time of the year. I've always kind of kept snails for wintertime dishes. And I'm like, well, I have those snails. I need to utilize them. And I started thinking about the halibut that came in the back door. And I've got all these tomatoes. And that is the beauty of cooking, is putting all those things together and making this dish that comes out, and it's just beautiful.
Well, and it's going to happen for just this moment, and then that's the end of it.
And then I'll never make it again.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's cool. Yeah. I love that.
Well, when we come back on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine, a little more quick food, maybe not quite as fancy, but boy, I'd like to eat that, and a whole lot more on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're talking about... Yeah, quick food.
Hey, Tony. So slightly off topic. So my birthday's coming up, and I'm thinking, what should I drink for my birthday?
It's funny. You ask this, and people always ask. And my first response that I put away now, because I'm used to the question, is, well, do you know what you're going to eat? Of course you don't know what you're going to eat. It's coming up in a couple of days. You don't know what your mood is. You don't know what your weather is.
Right.
You don't know about the company. You don't know if you'll be judged because you're eating squab with your hands or something. You know, I don't know. But you don't always know.
Mm-hmm.
Drink something that you're excited about. Drink something that you have not had before, that is not going to hurt your feelings if it's not your favorite thing that you ever had. And drink something the day is important to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So drink something that's important to you. So if it's a wine from a particular region that you love, if you love Barolo, find a really interesting one that you haven't had from a worthwhile year, drink that. And you can usually organize some elements of your menu around that kind of thing. Champagne is easy. Champagne, besides being celebratory, and you know, not to be cliche about it, it goes with an awful lot of dishes. It is very easy to organize a menu of some sort where you begin with champagne, and if you have to segue into something else, that it makes total sense.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a huge range in champagne, too. They're very light-bodied, blanc de blanc, and very charming things, that are brighter and lacier. And there are things that are bigger-bodied and more ebullient and plumper and sort of have that raspberry fruit character that comes from the red fruits and Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier. But have a tête cuvée. Champagne, honestly, as other wine prices have escalated, champagne, especially a lot of the ones that you have not heard of, have not escalated that fast at all for the quality of what's in the bottle.
That's good.
And the amount of work that goes into putting it there.
Right.
So that's that. I would look at that. And also your year. If it's a big birthday, can you take the time and find something from your birth year?
Yeah, I think it's very special when you can drink something from your birth year.
I've got nice little stacks of stuff for my daughters in the in the cellar from their years.
That'll be
which
good.
Which are luckily excellent in a couple of different places. So
that's good. That's cool.
They'll end up with a little variety. I wonder if they'll drink wine. If not, Dad will have to help.
So
how about some more quick food?
I really think we started to talk about fish, and seafood's so good for you, or fish is so good for you. Let's just, again, take something that's very accessible, which is salmon. And the nice thing is that if you go to a good grocery, you're going to get a good piece of salmon these days. And the great thing about salmon is that it's high in fat. And that's one of the reasons why it's so delicious and beautiful on your palate and your mouth. It feels good. And you can eat it raw.
Fat is good for you, too.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's so many different things. I mean, you know, I am so into ceviche right now. And I love the idea, or tuna crudo, or, you know, we're doing rockfish ceviche. We do salmon tartare. So I think it would be super fun to make, you know, a salmon crudo for dinner in the summertime. It's light, it's easy, it's quick. So, but you need a sharp knife, you need a good cutting board, you need a very, very fresh piece of fish. So if you have all those things, you know, do clean, make sure there aren't any bones in that piece of fish, that the belly is cut off, that the skin is completely off, that the fish is nice and clean. I always rub my hand, I'll make my hand just a tiny bit wet, and I'll rub my hand down the body of the fish to make sure there's not one scale on there. You do not want to eat a scale when you're eating raw fish. You don't ever want to, but definitely not when it's raw. It's extremely unappealing. It's a little bit like getting shells in your crab meat.
And when you say salmon crudo, it immediately makes me think of a cucumber salad. Mm-hmm. As a garnish for it.
What would you do?
In the fall.
Cucumber.
I mean, cucumber, a little bit of extra virgin, some lemon, some kind of white vinegar, white wine vinegar, so whether champagne vinegar, something like that. Tiny bit of garlic, decent amount of very finely chopped shallot. Let that actually kind of marinate in the bowl for a moment or two with salt. And then draw that out, because you'll have lost some water there, but you'll have concentrated some flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of chopped flat-leaf parsley as a garnish. So you have the crudo on the plate, nice slices. You have the cucumber salad there next to it, the sort of big nest of dressed parsley on top of that, and then a little dollop of creme fraiche.
Mm-hmm.
You could do with dill instead of the chives and the cucumber, but I mean, very simple, very light, very quick.
Yeah. So
you have to have a knife sharp enough to cut the crudo.
That's why I said.
When I think about home kitchens,
if you're going to do it, you've got to have these things, or you shouldn't be fooling with it. I'm going to go in a different direction with it. So if I were to do it right now and I still had some pretty slicing tomatoes, I would do call it carpaccio, tomato carpaccio, super thinly sliced, lay it out all over the plate. You could either use fleur de sel or a little bit of kosher salt. A little bit of freshly ground black pepper, your favorite extra virgin olive oil that's pretty. You know, maybe something from the southern part of France that has a little bit more perfume feeling to it, that's not like rich, dense, dark olives, but something a little bit like an arbequina oil that's a little prettier. And a little bit of that, you don't need a lot of that because, again, salmon has a high fat content, so it feels fatty on the palate, but just a little bit of oil to dress it. And I would do lime supremes, which is such a surprise when, instead of doing straight lime juice, which will change the way the salmon looks when the acid hits it, if you do lime supremes, which is, to do a supreme, you cut...
Which is just the little fillet and
from the inside of the lime. Right.
Just like the interior of an orange.
Mm-hmm. If you put like maybe two on each portion of those, and you make sure your guests know, or your family knows that they're there, so that they're not totally, you know, taking a bite of just lime, but they're, you know, knowing that there's going to be this treat in a minute when you're eating and you get, oh, that's really acidic. And then maybe some whatever fresh herb. I would definitely put a chiffonade of basil on there. And I'll say this, if you have a really sharp pair of scissors, kitchen scissors, you can just very finely snip the basil onto the salad at the last moment, onto the crudo at the last moment, and you don't need anything else. You could put arugula on there if you wanted to, or you could chiffonade, or, you know, use your scissors on some arugula. That would be very, very tasty. But what you really need is a little bit of acid in some form, and you're going to get that from the tomatoes as well. So, you know, you could even skip the lime, but I like lime with salmon a lot. But yeah, I think that would be just a great summer dinner. Quick, quick, quick.
Yeah, when I think quick, I also think pasta. Because, like, by the time you get the water boiling, you can mm-hmm. have a lot of stuff prepped.
I agree.
You know, if you have a heavy bottom pan, get one link of a sausage that you like. Chicken sausage, spicy Italian, pork sausage, whatever it might be. Let that brown in the pan. Add a little bit of finely chopped onion and garlic. And you heard me talking about this the other day. With one of those graters, the long ones, you can just take half tomatoes and hold the skin and push the tomato across the grater and get that crushed tomato.
Yeah, that's great.
Get that in the pan once it's all brown. Reduce that down. You could deglaze the sausage with a little bit of red wine too. Reduce that down. By the time you've even got that even close to sauce, your water is boiling and you can go on the water with your pasta. Your nice heavily salted water. Bring it out when it's al dente, a little before it's done as much as you'd like. Get it in the pan with the sauce. Let it cook a little while with the sauce.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
You know, for like a minute, minute and a half. Let the noodles actually absorb flavor.
Definitely.
And that and Parmigiano or, you know, fresh nip basil, like that, super quick, super
easy. I can make
easy.
That in 12 minutes.
Yeah, there's
easily.
No
yeah.
question.
Yeah, it's
and you're talking, they're two pans.
Yeah, it's not bad. No, that's not bad at all.
But well, I mean, honestly, you can...
Oftentimes, I'll make my sauce in the pot that I did my macaroni in or my pasta in, whatever pasta I'm using too. Which is nice. You know, while you're draining, if it's something that is right there, ready to go, you can just heat it up in that same pot.
Ooh, I've got a surprise for you. Chef's challenge.
Okay, so Italian bread, 2125 shrimp. Does that say bananas?
Bananas.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep putting bananas in there till you figure out how to use them.
Garlic, tomato paste, chives, live lobsters, yes. Heirloom tomatoes, zucchini, nasturtiums, October cranberry beans. Extra virgin olive oil, no dairy. Potatoes, your choice. No dairy.
I'm dairy intolerant. Sorry.
You mean, Tony. Italian bread.
That's
shrimp,
made up, by
bananas.
The way.
What am I going to do with bananas? I don't know. That's just, there's, okay. Shrimps. Well, that's funny. So saute the shrimp. Finally chop the garlic. I'm going to do heirloom tomato carpaccio on the plate for the shrimp. I think that would be fun as well. So thinly sliced heirloom tomatoes on the plate. And I'm going to do the same thing with the zucchini. I'm going to slice them. They're going to be raw. I'm going to layer them in with the heirloom tomatoes. I'm going to hit it with the extra virgin olive oil, salt and pepper. I'm going to cook down the October beans in, you've given me no spices, in water. I'll probably add a little bit of tomato paste to the water just because I don't have any other spices or anything to season it with. And I'm put a little bit of the sauteed garlic in with the beans while they cook, so they'll take on that flavor. And when the beans are done, I will put a little bit of the warm beans on top of the heirloom tomato and the very paper thin slices of zucchini. I'll saute the shrimp in the, I'm going to have to use olive oil because I don't have anything else. So saute the shrimp in a very tiny bit of olive oil, lay them on the salad. I will slice the Italian bread. Actually, I'm going to dice the Italian bread, toss that around in a little bit of olive oil, brown it in the pan, and I'll garnish with just a few little tiny pieces of Italian bread with the tomato. With the
little
beans.
Crouton. Yeah.
And then the nasturtiums, that's easy. They're a little bit spicy, so that would be a beautiful garnish for that dish and an edible garnish. And I'll put a little chive on there.
Salad.
Yeah, I'll put a little chive on there. So the only thing I have left are lobsters. Actually, I'll just boil the lobsters and add them to that dish. So it'll be a lobster and shrimp dish, and then potatoes and bananas. I'm left with interesting.
I will admit, okay, what I was hunting for, there was a dish that was famous at a restaurant a long time ago in the city, that was shrimp and banana.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, and they were the shrimp were cooked, the bananas were caramelized.
Huh.
And they were caramelized and cooked with a little bit of shrimp stock and lots of garlic.
Huh.
And
okay.
Served together. And,
well, I can do that.
Oh my gosh, they were good.
I bet. Well, I never in this world would have thought of that, but you could do that. But you'd have to saute it in olive oil. It would be a little strange.
Yeah, it's a dish from southern Spain.
You didn't give me. Okay. And the potatoes,
you
I guess.
You would saute in olive oil.
Okay, so with the potatoes, so that I'm actually using them, I'm going to do a tiny Parmesan scoop, which is like a little melon baller, and just do a few little pieces of potato on that salad as well. It certainly won't hurt anything. I'm sure it'll taste good as long as they're well salted.
Making an everything
and
salad.
And the bananas I'm going to eat while I'm making my
keep yourself
my
alive during your complicated
challenge.
Salad. All right. Yellow watermelon.
Because we got some in yesterday, and it was so exciting. Yeah. So delicious. Local.
Swordfish. I like swordfish. Mm-hmm. Napa cabbage, basil, apricots, garlic, lime, white peach, Swiss chard, baguette, extra virgin olive oil, heirloom tomato, chicken breast, watercress, raspberries? Rasp?
Yes.
Okay. I want the heirlooms and peaches, you know very well I like together. Heirlooms and white peaches. I'm going to dress those guys with a little bit of extra virgin, make sure they have good salt, lots of fresh basil. That's just as simple as can be. That's one of the pleasures this time of the year. I'm going to make a little toast with that baguette. I have oil and no butter, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to use oil. Actually, you know what? I'm going to make a little bruschetta. So I'm going to oil them and then grill them so they're nice and crunchy. And I'm going to take the apricots and a little lime juice and the raspberries. And boy, what I wouldn't give for a piece of salami for this bruschetta. But I'm not getting it. I'm getting a shaking head. Okay. Oh, well. But that on the bruschetta with a little bit of garlic. I know it sounds weird. It's really good.
I'm sure it's great.
Apricots are not that sweet. And then I've got swordfish, Napa cabbage, yellow, the watermelon. I'm just going to eat it. Yellow watermelon. It's too good. I mean, I could use it in the salad, but I'm just going to eat it. So what I have is a Napa cabbage. I'd want to make slaw with that. If I had, a little bit to make the mixture for slaw, a little salt, a little sugar, I'd want to make slaw with the cabbage. Grill that swordfish. For the slaw being there, what I really want is some kind of a slightly sweet sauce, a slightly sweet vinaigrette to garnish it with. Maybe I'd reserve a little bit of the peach to do that. And the swordfish. You've also given me no spices.
Mm-hmm.
This is difficult.
You could put watermelon on the swordfish, too.
You could.
That would be good.
You're not selling me on that.
Maybe a little hot pepper in there.
You're not selling me on that. Yeah, I like the cabbage and the swordfish business. I like the idea of doing almost like a peach barbecue sauce for it.
Yeah, that would be fun.
I think that'd be pretty fun. I don't know. I want french fries with that. Is that too weird?
No, but I really am starting to think swordfish and peaches would be very fun together, and I may have to make that.
You may have to make that.
Yeah, because I make a Napa cabbage slaw, and I think it would be fun if there was jalapeno in there.
I almost cannot. I struggle thinking of wine for that dish.
I get that.
I guess I need a high quality beer. Maybe one of the fine local brews.
There you go. Sounds good.
That'd be worthwhile.
That would be fun.
So I guess we'll send people off with french fries.
not a bad way to go.
Well, thanks for listening. If you want to download this or any one of our other podcasts, go to the WYPR website, wypr.org. Look for the Foreman Wolf page, and there is a myriad of choices on quick food and other topics. If you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Instagram as Chef Wolf and on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf.
I'm The Real Tony Foreman on Instagram. If you want to email us questions, comments, we'd love to hear from you. Send it to foremanwolf@wypr.org. And thanks for listening.
Happy Sunday.